vote very quickly, omnibus on the amendments and then the main motion? What do you think?
Let's do it.
Are you good with everything that's in right now, or are you missing a couple of things? You want to add some more things in? Got to find some money. Ah, okay. Next up, our friends from Corporate Services, the land of fleet and IT. I missed IT. There might be a few more questions then. Or not. The board is dark. Oh, there we go. Councillor Knack.
All right. Sorry. Thank you. So, I guess, so I'm going to ask the IT side of things. Help me understand. I'm reading through. There's about $73 million or so through five different profiles. A lot of them talk about, you know, some of the benefits where we're going to see cost savings. Where do we see it? Where and when do we start seeing those cost savings? As much as I like to think I'm good at IT and understand some of this, I'm reading these five and I'm still a little confused as to what each one hopes to accomplish and where we're going to see that cost savings. So
Councillor Knack, of the five profiles, three of those profiles are for renewal mm-hmm. of our current infrastructure and applications. Two of those profiles are for growth, and they would be in our yep. business applications and in our ERP. So for the renewal profiles, they would be to renew existing infrastructure and assets that we already have in play. It would be the two other profiles that would be the growth profiles. Yeah.
So walk me through. Let's give me help. Treat me like I know nothing, because I feel like I do in this case. I don't know anything. So what are we renewing? When we're spending that money on renewal, what's happening exactly? What are we renewing? How's that coming about?
So we would be renewing, first of all, the substantial infrastructure that we have in place that supports the applications. So that would be our server farm, our databases, our data center, our network, which is quite substantive, and all the basic infrastructure behind the scenes that keeps our applications running.
That just triggers a question. When's the last time we did a renewal of our servers and some of the bigger pieces like that?
We have a different evergreening cycle for all the different assets that we have in our infrastructure. So we would do servers every 5 years, do our network every 20 years. So every type of asset has a different evergreening cycle.
Okay. Sorry, I know I cut off. Let's talk a little bit about the growth side of things. Help me with what do we, you know, I've read through them, like I say, but I honestly still feel like I don't quite know enough.
So we have two growth profiles. One is for profile of our ERP application. So we have six large enterprise applications that are used across the organization. So we have a profile for that. And then we have a profile for growth of our business applications, of which we have about 140 of those across the organization.
Okay. So then the follow-up again being, so the growth again, the intent here, as I'm reading, as I've read through, it's we're looking to try and save ourselves elsewhere. So where do we start seeing that? Where's the follow-up? I mean, because like I said, I've read through some of these, and the goal is to try and save us money, so I'm wondering.
Well, it's not always to save money. Sometimes it's to meet service needs. So
understandable, but there are actually some written absolutely. Points in here that say we want to save money. So I'm just hoping to get an idea of where. And when do we start experiencing that savings?
So with respect to the IT, we went through and developed a much more robust IT governance process this cycle through. So whereas in the past you would have seen departments doing ad hoc IT projects or bringing individual projects to the council for consideration, through the governance structure, the administration reviewed almost 200 different terms of reference for different IT projects that were being considered across the organization. That governance structure went through and rationalized them all down to approximately 37 different growth projects and looked at them in terms of degree of risk, the return to the organization, whether or not they were shovel ready and could start right away in terms of their implementation. So each one of them has a different return. Each one offers a different value to the organization, some cost savings, some meeting different service needs of the organization.
So that, I mean, for the sake of me wanting to learn, is that something at some point that can be sent just in memo form to see?
Absolutely, we can certainly get you a list of all the different growth projects by
you. You know, I don't. If you have it, great. I just don't want you to create something new. I'm just curious on that. I had something else, but I forgot it, so I'm going to stop now.
Councillor Henderson.
Well, I guess I just want to, and I want to ask a kind of theoretical question, because part of what I don't understand here is the renewal versus growth piece, because it's hard. I can understand renewal for the hardware. It's really hard to imagine in my mind how a computer program breaks. or wears out, right? I can understand the need to change it if the hardware changes, and the hardware may create demands on our, you know, we may have hardware that, where our old software is no longer compatible with it. But it seems to me that what we're talking about here, probably mostly where we're calling it renewal, are actually enhancements. And we're using, you know, enhancements are playing a different kind of role in the way we've taken care of this in other parts of the organization. So, I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing it. I just want to make sure I understand what we're doing and making sure we're calling a spade here. So.
Counselor, many of our applications need to be upgraded, just like we do with the hardware. They need to be upgraded 3-4 years, every 3 or 4 years, just to keep them current. If we don't do that, then they're not supported anymore by the vendors that make those packages.
And if they're not supported, then you're open to things like security breaches, open to them not functioning on the new hardware. So while hardware has to be upgraded because it's evolving, software upgrades evolves as well, and they have to match.
So how do we distinguish, though? Because, you know, because clearly, you know, clearly the sell from the supplier on that is that they're not supporting the old software because they want us to buy their brand new spanky new software, and they sold that to us based on enhancements, right? I mean, it's just, I understand that somehow we're stuck here, that we're caught in somebody else's need to keep on selling us computer programs, but and I've asked this question before, it's a big bill for us to replace things that essentially are already doing what we need them to do.
Well, except that they also evolve their software based on changes in business processes that are become relevant in different industries. So by upgrading your software, like SAP, for example, they will be implementing things in their software upgrades that are best practices from other industries. By us upgrading our package, we are in essence upgrading our own business practices in lockstep.
Yeah, no, I'm not really questioning the need, but I mean, again, we would be upgrading because hopefully it would improve our efficiency.
Absolutely.
Right? But I'm just really questioning this idea that somehow or other that's a renewal piece rather than a growth piece. That's really the question I'm asking here, because I think in terms of how we balance it with other things, I think we consider
growth in IT to be something fundamentally new. So you don't have that functionality now. It's not automated now. It's not provided as part of the software package. So it's fundamentally new functionality that we're bringing online.
But that's a different test than the test we're using on our other stuff, is it not?
Councillor Henderson, I think it's actually the same test. So what we're saying is that this is software that we already have,
yeah,
and we already use the functionality in that software, but for a variety of reasons, we actually have to renew that on a several-year basis. And so that's not much different, really, than infrastructure, right?
No, but in the infrastructure, and you know, we're going to have this argument with our roads coming up, we're saying put it back the way it was, and that's what's funded, improve it while you're doing it. We're not, you know, is sitting here as an unfunded, right? And I understand, you know, all these other packages go 90% renewal, 10% growth. We haven't done that with IT.
I get that, but I would liken it more to, as opposed to infrastructure that we're building, how about infrastructure that we're buying? And so if we buy a new vehicle, it comes with improvements that have evolved in terms of vehicle, I guess, motors, etc. And so renewal of software comes with things that have evolved in that regard as well. And because we're purchasing, not creating, we don't actually always get to specify what comes in that package. I do believe, though, that Ms. Rosemahal could speak to the fact that we have put a great deal of effort into making sure that, for the most part, the software that we have and that's accessible by the largest number of people only has the things on it that we actually use.
That's correct. You know, we certainly don't have the largest SAP footprint that we possibly can because we don't need it all.
Yeah, so, I just think it just begs a question in terms of the business cases we make here, and that's which I think gets back to Councillor Knack's question about making sure and being vigilant about that. And it's hard to do that when we're just saying this is all renewal, when in actual fact there is enhancement built into it and understanding that. And I'm not saying don't do it. That certainly is not my argument. It's just understanding the full picture.
But just in terms of physical growth of our infrastructure and the applications that sit on top, we've grown about 22% just in our IT footprint over the last two cycles. So every time we tend to put in a new process or a new service, we tend to automate and rely upon technology somehow to support that in that introduction.
Councillor Sohi.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So these two growth profiles, did they come to any committee for discussion?
They did, actually. We have, in fact, a very robust IT governance committee that we've put in place. They're across the organization.
That's internal. I'm talking about any council committee. Did it come to council committee?
Well, it's coming to council committee now as part of a composite. Any projects that come that are larger than 2 million...
So the business case was never presented to...
Well, for those projects larger than 2 million, they would be coming to council as growth projects that would be competing for dollars just like any other capital project. For renewals that are larger than 5 million, they come forward to council for consideration as part of the capital program as well. So these tend to be smaller projects that come together into a composite.
So it's $20 million.
It is. It's 37 projects as well.
30 within those two, right? Okay, Ms. Rosen, then you need to help me.
Need
to help me in prioritizing. You saw this, right? And have many unfunded, and this is funded. And where does this fit in?
So, Councillor Sohi, we looked at this really, really hard.
Okay.
We probably had as much meeting on IT infrastructure as we did on the rest of the infrastructure combined, because we wanted to make sure that we get the approach right. And so the approach being right for us is one that is business unit led from a perspective of understanding what the needs are and not being what I would call bleeding edge or, quite frankly, even leading edge, just making sure that we can be competent in the things that we're doing. And so we involve the entire city in terms of the discussions of business needs and moving forward, and had a very evolved process not only for determining the ranking but for determining the amount of money that should be dedicated. And we did that on sort of three bases, three thrusts. We looked at what would be an average amount of money to spend on this kind of thing for an organization our size, what have we spent in the past, and what do our needs tell us that we should be spending. So this is actually, I believe, a strong recommendation on behalf of administration, but we understand that it's a lot of money.
No, but that's what I needed to hear, because I need to be assured that you've done their analysis and then you did your oversight and vetting and did the CLT.
CLT did as well,
okay.
Yes.
All right, good. Thank you.
Councillor Oshry.
So just to keep going on that, how much do we spend, what does the corporation spend on IT?
In terms of a total spend,
yeah.
$94 million a year.
So on a totally ballpark, it's what, 4% of our
3%.
Of our revenue?
About 3.3%.
So for a corporation, it's usually between 3 and 6. I think so. It seems to me it's on the lower end of the.
It's below the 3.8, which is typical for public sector.
So public, because I know private, it's 3, 4, up to 6, depending if it's a media company. But so you're on the lower end of the municipal.
We are, but we have good solid technology inside the city of Edmonton, and we've done a good job rationalizing that across the organization.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I'm a fan of IT. I think more is properly handled. More is better.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, IT also has notoriously easily has cost overruns and escalations,
yeah.
Probably more than anything else I can think of. So can you talk a little bit about these numbers and how you can ensure that they're not going to go substantially over?
So, Councillor, all of the projects, whether they're on the renewal or growth side, are managed by a certified project manager. The status of them is reported biweekly. There's a business case defined at the start of the project. And for the larger projects, there's a gating process at certain phases within the project to decide whether to go ahead or not. And at the end, project completion is done to make sure that comparing the original requirements to what was accomplished.
And just to supplement once more, building upon what Mr. Torlia said and Ms. Rosen, we also on a or semi-annual basis go back to the committees that have done the governance to review the performance of the projects underneath their stewardship.
Okay. What percentage is hardware versus software?
A renewal?
Or both?
The larger portion is actually in the applications, so approximately half.
And what percentage of the half that software is off the shelf versus stuff that we build ourselves?
60% is off the shelf and 40 is custom. And the custom is typically the older software that we built several years ago that we are trying to transition into COTS.
So it's legacy software that we're kind of adding modules or whatever, but eventually...
Or they
wherever
are
possible to is the philosophy that wherever possible you use off the shelf.
Absolutely.
All right. Just switching over to fleet. Can you the number that's on here, where is it? The big number, 80 something, 87 million. So again, what's it? This is all. Is this purchasing? Are there any leases involved?
This is all renewal of the current fleet. We own 99% of our fleet assets in the city.
So when it says leased by City of Edmonton on the side of the vehicle, what's that?
They're typically seasonal leases. We did a comprehensive analysis with materials management 2 years ago and identified the business case for leasing or renting. If you were to require the vehicle more than 6 months, it would be better off to own it. If it's less than, you're better off to lease it. And we were able to attach some pretty solid numbers to that.
That's a good lesson for everybody here. If this is all, so previously approved, that was nothing. So can you just explain? So, sorry, let me back up. So this is 87. How much was it last 4 years?
It's typically our reserve is about 17 million a year on average that we spend on replacement of vehicles in the reserve.
Is this how much higher than last go around?
Well, if we look at our reserve for 15, it's 23 million. 16 is 21, and I'm just trying to look, Councillor Oshry, on what it was this year in 14.
I think you'd find that our reserve spend year over year is pretty consistent for the last two cycles.
But it's a bit more now.
Well, as the fleet grows, then the reserve fund grows.
Okay. Give me one more second. Sorry. Okay, no, that's good. Thank you.
Councillor Walters?
Two questions on that. How many vehicles are in our fleet?
Our fleet that we own, the asset that we own, about 3,900, Councillor Walters, and then we actually provide service to about 5,000 vehicles between EPCOR and Alberta Health Services on top of the ones we actually physically own.
So we turn over about a quarter of them every capital budget cycle.
That would be reasonable.
And this may be a bit of a newbie question on this. Piece, where does our fleet reserve or fleet services replacement reserve originate? Where does that money come from? How do we build up the reserve?
Well, the reserve is paid by the users. So every department contributes to the reserve to replace the vehicle.
Out of the operating?
On an inflated basis.
So that's built into the operating budget?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Okay, that's all I had. Thanks.
Councillor Knack and Henderson on second round, right? Okay. Councillor Essinger, if you could take the chair.
The chair.
So portions of fleet are recovered through the allocation of operating costs back to each other part of the city. And not to get into the operating dimensions of that, but some of those fees that are charged back to, say, parks for a parks vehicle covers not only the maintenance of it, and the fuel of it, but also the replacement of it, right?
Correct, but the replacement fee is separate from the charge for maintenance and fuel, so we keep them separate.
You do charge them separately, but then and so you should, because it goes into a dedicated reserve, which is the fleet replacement reserve, right?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor.
And so that's 87 million or something like that, so in that order.
Yeah, 87.2 in this cycle.
Okay, and. So then I noted that there were a number of other areas of expenditure, for example, the fueling station or vehicle and equipment hoist program, for example. So the equipment that is necessary to maintain the vehicles, that's not covered through the cost recovery back to the operator.
That's correct.
Okay. And you draw that line So it's only the replacement of the vehicles that is the piece that's charged back to operating?
That's correct.
We draw the line between direct and indirect costs, Mayor Iveson. So we charge back to the departments what can be directly attributed to the departments, with the exception, of course, of the utilities. We get a share of everything.
Right. And then in the case of transit, transit's the one kind of vehicle that we don't treat for this kind of replacement so that it can be eligible for other grants, and they're big costs.
Correct.
And they're lumpy, way more lumpy than pickup trucks.
That's
correct. And so ditto the bus wash replacements. Those are just capital costs. That they might be transit capital costs, they might be fleet capital costs. It doesn't really matter. It's not going back through the operating budget in any way.
That's correct.
Okay. And then in terms of the IT, these are big, big composite profiles.
Yeah.
And you have done a lot of work on IT governance, and I think we've talked about it a fair bit at the audit committee, arising from recommendations previously held. I guess the first question I have about these is I don't see any operating impacts, positive or negative. And that might be difficult to do on a composite basis, but some of them may cost money to maintain, I would guess.
It's true. And so what we would suggest to you that we could certainly get that back to you with the operating costs of capital or impacts of capital. It typically, for these types of spends, and this is consistent with our spend for the last two capital cycles on growth, is between $200,000 and $300,000 a year. It tends to be for software maintenance or for support resources to support the systems once they're in place. But we could certainly get that breakdown back.
But there is an assumption that some of these are going to help with business processes and may generate some...
Yes.
Some cost avoidance.
And so as we get better at actually allocating dollars to software that improve our business processes, it is absolutely our intent to track any savings associated with that as well.
That's correct.
Okay. So we'll get some more detail there.
So we're not very good at projecting that yet, Mayor Iveson, because we just don't have that experience and that orientation.
And you didn't have the software to do that until
Yes.
this go around, right?
And so it's now a matter of we're learning as we go, and so we'll be providing the information to you on an actuals basis as opposed to a projected basis.
Okay. I'm wondering if this is the kind of thing that requires more than every 4 years approving. You know, it's kind of like the roofs, but it's a different, it's a very, very different line of business. But, you know, again, I don't dispute that we probably need to be in this order of magnitude. I think the benchmarks from Councillor Oshry were helpful in terms of, that's on the operating side. I guess there's probably a question about what is a reasonable...
Actually, it's operating and capital.
That's combined?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's good then. But I think... I know you've been doing a lot of work on IT governance, back to what came out of audit, but I can't say honestly that I understand what the gatekeeping is.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be useful to have some examples. I think it might be good to bring back a report. And this is sort of medium-term governance stuff. So this isn't something urgent arising from this. So I think this would be a good thing to maybe take one of these as an example, maybe the growth one, and one of the growth ones, one of the renewal ones, and give us some examples of the kinds of things that are in there, how you track them, how you evaluate the priority of what you do, some examples of things you decided not to do because they were less important than, say, things that you did do, that sort of thing.
We can certainly bring a report back to council. We can certainly do an information sharing session, whichever works for council's benefit. We can certainly come back on a yearly basis and provide a feedback on what's been accomplished for that year as well.
I think something like that, let's give that some thought, and then maybe towards the end there might be a, in terms of what provides us as governors the best sense of what you're up to in these composites, I think that would be helpful. But I'm agnostic as to the best way to report back. So I'll think about that. I'll take back the chair.
Turn the chair.
And, or actually, somebody want to move a second round?
So moved.
Thank you. Seconded by Councillor Oshry, moved by Councillor Walters. Please vote on a second round on corporate services and display the vote. That's carried. Councillor Knack.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So just a few more questions. I remember the one I was going to ask. We're developing an open city strategy right now. Very excited about this. how is this tying into that? Have we start? Where are we in that developing that strategy, and how is this going to help us do that?
Well, certainly. If I could just sort of rolled up maybe some themes behind what the growth packages are, and that might help. Certainly what you would see across these projects is that there's lots of expansion in the mobile area for remote workers. That's certainly a theme that comes through many of the projects in the growth package. There's a very large theme around data analytics and the use of analytics for decision making and for open data. There's a theme there. Lots of innovations around modernizing city processes, lots of TIRs in that area, and lots of work around leveraging our spatial data and our GIS data. So the city has a wealth of pools of data in the GIS space, lots of different project profiles to do with that. So it is very integral to the Open City agenda and just the whole modernization agenda for the city.
So I'm going to ask a very specific question, and this probably ties into the growth, but I wanted to talk specifically about, and this is why I've asked a lot of questions, but like how we're treating apps in the city of Edmonton. We have a team now that helps the various departments, my understanding, to create apps. I guess I flag that because now already within the city of Edmonton, I think we've got three or four apps already created with all the other branches and departments looking at creating their own. So we've got, we could have 29 different apps in the city of Edmonton versus trying to throw this information as part of the open data catalog, let the people do it and stop. I worry that we're wasting our resources.
Councillor Neck, we have no quorum at the moment.
Count quorum, maybe?
Seven. Yeah, we're good. We're totally good.
In response to that question. Out.
So I was just finishing, and so I guess I'm trying to figure out, you know, and I use that specific example because I don't really have much else to me, but I worry we're spending a lot of money helping all of our departments create apps versus letting the great people of the city have access to our data, let them do the work for us so that we're not spending money, so that we're not creating 10 different user apps that now I have to reference instead of creating one master setup. So how are we managing that?
So three things. First of all, the IT team that's working on the mobile apps is not building the apps. They're actually setting the standards for how the apps get built, which is a big change. So instead of having one-off apps that are all different architectures and not necessarily pulled together cohesively, that team is looking at how we build a whole catalog of apps based on standards. So it's a bit of a different turn.
So I guess that's good, but if we're building the whole catalog of apps, still we're still setting
going
back to that.
We're building those apps or helping those apps to be built that wouldn't be built necessarily by the private sector. We're also publishing loads and loads of open data right now. So our open data catalog has expanded immensely for exactly that purpose. And we're also working with organizations like Startup Edmonton, who are looking at the entrepreneurial community and young innovators to try and use our data to build apps themselves. So we're trying all different avenues. But for some, we will build some ourselves, like the 311 app, because we can do it best ourselves.
So I guess maybe that's to the mayor's point, or as we get more information, because I'm still not convinced that we should be building 10 to 15 to 20 different apps under the City of Edmonton banner.
I would agree.
And it seems like that's what we're helping enable versus, because I know of a couple of departments that have talked about their apps.
I think we...
And I know this is a small piece of this entire...
From a citywide perspective, we want corporate apps as opposed to departmental apps. Mm-hmm. You may want to ask that question of every agency that comes to see you because they've all got their own set of apps.
So there's a
socialization here in terms of how we actually communicate with other entities as well. But your comment about a corporate perspective around app development makes absolute sense. And your comment about do we need to build them all ourselves makes that, no, we don't. But the concept that we would not be in some respects in the app world is probably not going to be the case.
No, that's fair. Well, that's okay. Well, I'm good for now. Thank you.
Councillor Henderson?
I think I'm going to need Ms. Rosenbach for my questions, so sorry to... I'm puzzled by something, and I guess I should have known this up until now, but it has caught me a bit by surprise, and the mayor picked up on this too, that I had assumed in Fleet as an enterprise service, as a service that the capital costs, that the costs of the equipment were rolled into what we were billing out. So, and I understand now that you're saying that we don't do that for our internal services, but we do that for utilities.
Correct.
And I think the same probably would be true of the IT as well, right? The capital cost of the IT probably as well. So my question is, if we're billing the utilities for that, where is that revenue showing up in here? Because it sort of feels, and my mind's sort of not working terribly clearly on this right now, but it sort of feels like we're sort of billing the taxpayer twice now.
Well, it shows up actually in the operating budgets on the recovery lines. So when we go through operating next week, we can point that out there.
No, I understand, but we're now using utility money to buy infrastructure here, and it's not showing up as...
So it shows up when the money comes from the utility, it shows up as pay-as-you-go.
Okay.
Councillor Henderson, because the money that comes in, that gets allocated to pay for capital, if it's from an internal city source, is pay-as-you-go, right?
Okay. All right. Okay. I just wanted to, I'm just trying to keep it straight in my own mind, because it had never crossed my mind before that we weren't all in terms of what we were billing out to ourselves, and that we were using a different set of standards between the two.
Well, so not just for the utilities, but for AHS and police as well, right? Like, so there's some full costing that goes on.
They're being billed. Anything external to our own departments is paying a piece of this infrastructure as well.
Correct.
We're just not billing it back out to our own internal departments.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, I just wanted to check on that because I should have known that, I guess, and I didn't. It's part of the, when we only do the capital budget every 3 years and we're doing the operating budget on a regular basis, you miss some of these things. So great. I just assumed that all of it was being billed out to the users and we were not differentiating between the different kind of users. Okay, great, thanks.
Councillor Oshry.
Super quick question for Fleet. When we... So the lifespan of a vehicle is typically 4 years?
It can vary, Councillor. It depends on the use of the vehicle. There's specialty equipment that have either longer or shorter life cycles than that. So we look at the cost of maintenance over time against the age and make a decision when the cost point of maintenance versus net value overlaps, whether to move it to salvage.
But these are vehicles that are used much more heavier?
Well, typically they're
heavily than
of a commercial grade, for sure, Councillor, yes.
And then we sell those?
Yes, we do.
And then so does that revenue from the vehicles that we sell offset the cost of the next, of the replacement vehicles, that you're the money that you're asking for us?
The proceeds, where there's proceeds, it goes to the reserve, but it certainly wouldn't upset the cost. The actual value of the vehicle at salvage might be actually less or more. We have vehicles that could have been written off in an accident
but if
or
you're
damaged.
Selling a, give me a piece of equipment, can I?
Pickup truck.
If you're selling a pickup truck after 4 years, that costs the city $30,000.
And as an example, it wouldn't be unusual for that to be 10% of or less of its purchase value.
Correct. So I was going to say $5,000. But what, so you sell it for $5,000 or $3,000. That revenue, what happens to that revenue? That $5,000 or $3,000, does that offset the next replacement?
Yes,
it goes back into the reserve.
Next one that costs $30,000 actually costs $27,000.
It goes back to the department that actually had the vehicle to begin with.
So the next one
it goes against the reserve.
You're asking us for $27,000 to replace that.
Correct.
Not $30,000.
That's
right. Okay. Right. Just making sure. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a revolving fund. Those are all of the questions we have for you, Ms. Rosenholm, and your folks. And no motions. No motions. I'll do a subsequent, but I'll work with you on the phrasing of that one. So, to learn more, so we can bring down SD, Sustainable Development, for those of you who are playing along. And just a word to councillors, wherever possible, if you can refer to a page number, if you're referring to something, that makes it easier for admin to go to where you're going, and anyone else who's following along can flip to the right pages as well. So wherever possible, please preface your questions with a page number. And just while we have a moment, because we have 9, which we need to do this, we have one more report, which we can add to the agenda, which is in this moment of transition, which is 5.4, the natural gas buses at Westwood Garage, additional information. So somebody want to move to
I'll
add
move.
That one? Thank you. That's moved by Councillor Sohi, seconded by Councillor McKean. Any questions? I don't see any. Please vote on the addition of 5.4 to the agenda. I'll display the vote. That's carried. That's 9. That's good. That was funny how we almost lost quorum there. Good thing we didn't, actually.
You were standing up?
Yeah. Yeah. Get confused, yeah. Good. We're probably good to ask the question, flag it, and then we'll get the replacement page. Okay, questions to sustainable development. Councillor Henderson, sticky from the last time.
Yeah, sure. No, I clicked on, but I wasn't first seconds ago.
I decided to change.
All right, sorry, now I'm way too far ahead. Just curious, just having had our nice IT discussion, why on page 184 we have yet another IT discussion, and why that wasn't part of the previous one? I mean, given Mr. Farbrother's observation about our agencies and stuff, why is this a separate piece of work?
Because it's being fully funded and project managed through current planning. IT is providing the staffing, the resources, the support for it, and it's being funded out of current planning.
Okay, I would have thought that IT could handle it and use the current planning money. I mean, that's just a money source thing. It's just odd that it's coming to us a separate piece here. So it jumped out only because it's juxtaposed by barely a page.
So the project manager and the staff are IT. What we've done is we've embedded them within current planning, and they're working directly with the subject matter experts to ensure the best outcome.
Okay. All right. Anyway, moving on page 196. The initial phase of Jasper Avenue, what we doesn't say in here is how much of Jasper Avenue this gets us. It says it's initial phase, but we don't know how much initial phase is.
Page number, Councillor?
196. Right, it says we're going to start on 109th Street and work back towards what we've already done, but it actually...
Councillor Henderson, that would be 2 blocks of Jasper Avenue.
Okay, so we'd basically be talking 109th to 107th. If I'm reading this correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And then longer term, so that would be next 4 years, so to do 107th to one, so we'd still have 5 blocks to go that would be 4 years away.
That's correct, on the east end of Jasper.
Okay. All right, so whether or not we, okay, yeah. I was a bit confused on page 202, the initial phase of the 105th and 102nd Avenue Park. I'm wondering what the phase after the initial phase is, because I thought it was all, I'm trying to imagine what would be left undone at this point.
That was my understanding as well, Councillor Henderson.
So, Councillor Henderson, if I could clarify, initial phase does not mean the initial phase of the project, it means the initial phase of the CRL, because we had captured some projects in the initial phase of funding, and then some projects in a later phase. So all it means is that this was a project that had been identified for the initial phase of funding. I apologize, that's a little misleading.
Just to be clear, because that's what I thought, so this will actually, that small pocket park, that this will get it for us. Okay, good, just doing a double check on that. The 109th Street streetscape improvements, and I asked this question because part of it is a commitment that was made back to Garneau in 1982, whereupon they agreed to a fair amount of densification that has happened over the last 30 years, and we still, sorry, this is page 230, and the commitment to them and also to the rest of 109th Street when we did the plan a year ago said that we were going to commit to doing at least the planning piece of this in 2015. So, I mean, I guess there's two pieces to this particular puzzle. One of them is a long-standing commitment to a neighborhood that took a fair amount of densification, actually took a significant amount of densification. It's our second densest neighborhood in the city now. And yet we've never stepped up with the plan for that piece between White Avenue and the river, and arguably those sidewalks are beyond jammed and packed up. So, that's one piece. But I'm actually more concerned about how we can at least follow through on the commitment we made 2 years ago, let alone the one we made 30 years ago, for how we make sure that we can plan the rest of that street in the timeline. Because the worry is that we're going to see a lot of development along there that we're hoping to be able to fit into some of this. And if we wait too long to actually get a unified plan, it's going to happen in a kind of ad hoc way. And I think that's part of what we wanted to stop from happening. And if we wait for 5 years, that's what we're going to end up with is a mess.
Councillor, so I appreciate your history, and I agree that there have been outstanding commitments that have been riding for some time. While we did talk about doing something in 15, and the package that you have on page 230 talks about capital being expended in the last 2 years of the four-year, we did put in information that we're going to seek a service package in 16 to do the conceptual design. And that conceptual design at $1.5 million would do the entire corridor from 61st to 89th.
And how much is that number? Because, I mean, theoretically, even if we were just doing the conceptual piece right now, I wouldn't mind knowing that number. And my question is whether or not it may not be appropriate necessarily even to deal with in the capital budget. This may be something we can raise in the operating budget. I do think we need to make sure it's there, and continuing to push it off, we're going to be sitting here 30 years from now with another broken promise. And we're, these are neighborhoods that are the ones that are taking the density because we're saying we're going to step up for them.
We estimate $1.5 million for the conceptual.
So $1.5 million, and we could do the conceptual piece as an operating piece, yes?
That's our intent. Yeah.
And Councillor Henderson, that would be what we would recommend. I'm over here, Councillor.
Okay.
As conceptual planning is traditionally being done out of the operating.
So the conceptual planning, and then we could look at the other commitment, which is probably getting going on the north end of it. That's a separate piece. And how much? You've got two blocks of that in here, right? Do we know what the dollar figure would be of getting us further on with that?
Yes. To do the six blocks north of White to 89th, about six and a half, we would be looking at somewhere $9 to $10 million for
tonight. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'm certainly prepared to hold off on the operating piece to bring the conceptual forward, but I think I would like to bring it forward in this budget cycle. It'd be one-time money anyway, would it not? And I'll have to think about the $9 to $10 million, which is a long-standing promise to a neighborhood that has taken immense amounts of density. Great, thanks.
I'm out of time.
I think that's an operating budget amendment when the time comes, though, right?
Yeah.
Councillor Knack.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With regards to, let's talk about parkland, both in new areas and mature areas. So let's start with new areas. Do we, and as I look at things that maybe we left unfunded, acquiring park space for new areas as they develop, is there any money set aside right now for that?
Councillor, yes, there's a funded profile, a composite. It's about $16 million for the acquisition of parks in suburban areas below a district campus site. There's a separate profile for that. So,
and when we do district sites, which would not be funded then, I'm guessing, right now, what's sort of the criteria to trigger where we would do this? I mean, there's another ASP coming probably next year, and we've got a couple new areas for. And so what's a trigger for when we would start wanting to acquire district park space?
District park space, from an accounting exercise, is something that we get the cash at the back end of the development, because we're waiting for most of the area structure plan to become subdivided so that we can begin to get the reserves that come out of that. If we've got a need for advancing that, what we have to do is bridge with cash. And that's what the one profile at $32 million anticipates. And that's to complete Lewis Farms, McConaughey Heritage, and two other sites.
Okay. Let's go to the mature community side of things. Do we? And I recognize we, this is a reminder constantly, we don't have a policy for a set amount of park space in mature neighborhoods, but as we do begin this infill conversation more and more, do we have any programs in place that set aside money for general park space in some of these mature neighborhoods?
Again, we have profiles that are not funded for that purpose, and there are at three levels. We have three, one specifically for the acquisition of a park in a TOD area from McKernan and Belgravia.
Okay.
A second one around supporting long outstanding commitments relative to ARPs, where again this issue about accepting an additional density was going to drive additional amenities. And then
I'm just sorry because that one's probably as important. So we have some outstanding things that we have, requirements we haven't met for communities with ARPs currently right now?
Yeah, just to name a few, Strathcona, a couple on the north side, Central MacDougall, Queen Mary, etc.
How long would they have been waiting?
Those plans have been around since the 80s.
And we haven't followed through with delivering?
Not on all aspects, but no.
What kind of, so what was that profile, out of curiosity? What's kind of cost are we looking at? I realize I probably should have asked that.
Yeah, if you could just ask me the next question, and I'll get the page number.
That's probably the big one now.
It's actually not in the...
It's not in the main binder.
No, it's in attachment 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see in attachment 6, so I'm wondering, do you have a ballpark cost for what that would be? And is that solely for current outstanding ARPs? And what about, I mean, I know we only have one more still coming.
We have a profile in there at $32 million, mm-hmm. and it was not for all of the ARPs. I can't say at this time in terms of what commitments were outstanding from those, but we targeted ones where we felt there were the development pressures or the amount of density that had occurred over that time was where we wanted to target some of this. So the naturals are, of course, Central McDougal, just north of the arena site, Strathcona, obviously, with White Avenue.
Okay.
Now, the third profile you asked me about was one for surplus school acquisition. And we do anticipate over time that the boards are going to be releasing at a measured rate a number of school sites. And, of course, in many cases of older mature neighborhoods, that is the park space or the sizable amount of park space. And what's looking potentially to be surplus is the whole site. The city has an opportunity as the first offer buyer to buy that site, but not necessarily the school. But we would be definitely interested in the land itself.
And so we have, sorry to clarify, profile is funded.
It's another unfunded profile.
That's another unfunded. Yes. So if any surplus school sites come available in the next 4 years, we don't have the money currently to buy them?
We don't. What we've done in the case of two recent ones, Prince Rupert and Wellington, is we did dip into reserves to buy those. But the reserve accounts, in most part, are cash flowed by using suburban reserves that come into them.
Hmm. How much was that unfunded one?
Let me check.
Councillor Neck, while Mr. Rome is checking, we're talking about surplus school sites that were built and assembled before the institution of reserves. So these are older inner city surplus sites.
Right. These are not dollar deals. These aren't sites that we would get back. So these are at market value. And the profile for surplus schools is about $21.5 million.
Out of time. Thank you.
Councillor Anderson.
Thank you. On page 208, this is stormwater outlet trunk at the Technology Park in the northeast. Am I reading this correctly at the bottom? Alternatives consider, we can share in the oversizing now with a developer for $13 million, total cost $17
million. Councillor Anderson, conceptually you're correct.
I haven't asked the question.
Okay.
Or if we don't do that, we'll be required to upfront 100% of $60 million and then wait what could be a long period of time to try to recover that money.
First of all, we wouldn't necessarily, as a city, have to upfront a second drainage for $60 million. I think really what the story is here is that by oversizing the pipe that's now being developed in the area,
yes,
we're able to continue to build towards a storm sewage, a storm solution, thank you, for the ETP. And if we don't do the oversizing during development to the first phases within the Horse Hills area, that means that at some point in the future, a complete separate dedicated pipe up to $60 million in value is going to have to be put in.
Not to service the Technology Park, but to service through the Technology Park to other neighborhoods.
Well, no, actually, to get to the
Technology Park?
Yeah.
So, Ms. Rosen, I mean, if we then wait, and this is unfunded, and we're not going to participate with the developer to oversize, we will then have to develop a second pipe and pay the oversizing or the upfront cost on it and then apply to developers down the line as it moves towards neighborhoods 4 and 5 for their share.
So the challenge, Councillor Anderson, is that typically we would insist that the developer for the current neighborhood structure plan oversize the pipe. We would currently insist on that, but because the oversizing is such of a magnitude that the development couldn't actually bear it, they would then not be able to go forward with their development. And so that isn't a good situation. And so I think that what we are doing is bringing this forward for council's discussion, because we're actually talking potentially about doing something that we don't do. We don't. The city doesn't upfront.
But okay, are we going to end up spending just in what's being built up there $60 million instead of 17? If we participate in oversizing what's going in there now, we won't have to build the second one.
What it does is that there's probably two stages just to get to the Manning. First of all, through Horse Hills. And what this does is it deals with the first stage.
Yes.
And then the answer is that if we don't do that, then at some point that separate pipe will have to be developed, which would be estimated to be $60 million.
So have we analyzed the benefits and the financial savings to do this, because borrowing $3 million is going to cost, what, under $1 million a year for, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
I mean, is there wisdom? Have we done the financial analysis to
So, Councillor Anderson, the other complicating factor is that this is not the only cost, of course, that would be involved in getting servicing to the EETP. And so it's then about the risk around the EETP as a whole. And so while we've done a little bit of analysis associated with this, and yes, I can tell you with no hesitation that it makes much more sense, if we're going to do it this way, to oversize this pipe now than to do anything later on. But it's then about you understanding that doesn't actually then get us an EETP. There's a whole bunch of other servicing that has to happen as well.
Thank you. I did speak to you about page 212, Ms. Rosen, but I did want to mention it in public. The previously approved Edmonton Arena tax-supported debt of $541. Anybody reading that might assume that we are using tax-supported debt to pay for our share of the arena, when really it's CRL?
That's correct, and we'll put a replacement page out. That's just a legacy from our previous system, and I apologize for that.
Also on page 215, is that exactly the same situation for the quarters, phase one, tax-supported debt?
Yes.
It should be CRL?
Yes.
Just clarifying then on page 212 in the replacement, it's some of its tax-supported debt attached to rent, some of its tax-supported debt attached to ticket tax, and some of its CRL.
That's correct.
Yeah, I think if you bring back the revision with that all spelled out,
we will.
That'd be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Good catch, Councillor Anderson. Councillor Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So on page 188, the surplus school sites, first place program, just in terms of the $2.5 million, which is basically our development costs, right? Because we act as the developer of subdivision.
Councillor Walters, this profile would address the upfront pre-planning costs associated with looking at all the sites simultaneously, so we get a little bit ahead of the curve. It would cover things like permanent area contributions, roadway assessments, geotechnical assessments, and so that when we get in front of these community groups, we have a clear understanding what the impacts are or the impediments are to developing those surplus school sites.
So if we have to add drainage capacity or roadway improvements,
that would not be covered by this.
What would that be covered by?
That would be part of the development costs.
That would be the development costs.
That's right.
And who pays for those?
It's part of the developer's package.
So when whoever we have.
We have two developers in the first place.
That's right, so they would pay for that. Okay. And in the case of Reese, where we had a certain understanding about what it would cost us up front, and then we do resiting, does that add to our costs at all, or is that the developer's cost again?
Well, the resiting approach does add to our cost, because there's a significant amount of community consultation that is embedded in trying to work with community groups to understand what those opportunities
are. That's on the operating side, though.
That is on the operating side, but this is the, yes.
Okay. So this is sufficient.
This particular package only deals with the first place sites, which is the first tranche of surplus school sites.
Right, no, I get that.
There's an unfunded package for the second.
I just want to make sure that there's enough in here that when we do reciting, if money from this pot is required for that, that this is sufficiently funded.
I believe it is, and we've carefully done the analysis site by site, year by year, and that's the number that Mr. McCarker's come up with.
We don't want to do community consultation, hear the need to recite, and then not be able to afford to recite. That's not a risk, is what you're saying.
I'm not saying that, Councillor Walters, because quite frankly, this is an opportunity to take a look at the sites that have been declared surplus, to do put some holes in the ground, test the soils to make sure they're appropriate, understand the servicing, pay off any assessments. But if the community group wants to resite to a different location that wasn't contemplated, then we would have to do further assessments.
And that's not coming out of
that's this not pot. Coming out of this particular pot, no.
So which pot is that coming out of then?
It's not coming out of any pot. We would bear those costs, and we would have to do what we're doing now, which is work closely with the community group and do further tests and further assessments, and those costs are borne from the surplus school site reserve.
Okay, so that's what I'm trying to understand, is that we're, if a community, if we do consultation and a community says let's recite it here, we determine there's some additional costs to do that, that we have the money in reserve to cover those costs.
Yes.
Okay. Page 216. Sorry. I think we get a second round. Oh, this is regarding the RVA connected infrastructure. So that we're asking for an additional $3.2 million, and just so I'm clear, this is to pay for items that Building Canada won't cover, but we need to pay for to support expenses that they do cover, essentially.
You are right.
Okay.
Yep.
And what are some of those things? Because what you've listed in here seems like operating stuff.
It is. It's staff cost, and that's why it's not eligible under their capital. It's staff cost, percent for art costs, certain studies, certain types of consultations, historical assessments, etc.
So we pay for that out of capital and not operating?
We're paying for it out of our capital, but it's not eligible under the Building Canada.
No, I understand that, but.
So Councillor Walters, over here.
Oh.
There's many capital profiles in parks and perhaps in roads where there's design and consultation exercises that take place, some work that's done in-house, and those are charged against capital. So that's a similar model.
Okay. I appreciate that, Mr. Latta. So the and 222, also potentially related to RVA. This $5.5 million is for land acquisition. And is that there's some money in the provincial piece of the RVA pie that's for land acquisition if we can match it. So could this be that money?
Yes.
So this would be two.
So what we're putting in through one of our reserve accounts is $5 million, and $500,000 is what we anticipate might be necessary to acquire only the pieces of trail development the RVA thinks is necessary.
That's part of their master plan, but then that matching money is there, so these are 50 cent dollars, basically.
These are 50 cent dollars.
Okay.
Councillor,
thank you.
I'm going to pass the chair to Councillor Essinger, who will go to Councillor Ossery next. Unless she wants to do something different. She's in charge now.
Councillor Ossery.
Thank you. There's a growth profile for district park land acquisitions for new ASP. So when we're talking about, I'll talk with the rec center again, but when we're talking about that, Mr. Ohm, can you, it's not funded, so what are the opportunities there?
Well, we've got subdivision that's occurring just south of the campus site, so there's a possibility working with the area developer that we'll be at least able to acquire some directly as land. And there's going to be, based on the size of the site and what we have available to acquire through MEMART, we're going to need some cash. And so that's what that particular profile was set up. But I think, and it was raised here, a school or a rec center is definitely in an amenity. It's definitely of interest to a developer to see whether it can't partner in some fashion with the city to make it happen. And we would explore a partnership around that to fast-track some kind of land assembly.
And so would they need to see some sort of commitment from us? How does that work? Do they wait till there's a commitment from us, or do you have those conversations with them at the same time, or do they go first?
Well, It can work in a number of different ways, but I think the interest shown around getting the funding for the capital facility will then also drive the need for the assembly, and we can work on some different models on how we can get the land.
And would there be cost efficiencies if we? I mean, would it be cheaper, I guess, I'm implying.
If we're using cash, to buy it as quickly as possible.
But then to put in the services, if we're building it out the same, or designing or building it out the same time as they're doing their neighborhoods, there's got to be some, and we're partnering with them, are there some efficiencies there for both parties, I guess?
Yeah, just to avoid the inflation, et cetera, and depending on what the partnership is in terms of, and we're looking at using in another program under shared park development, using the contractor, or using the developer as the contractor for the work.
All right. Changing tunes to page 234, which is the West Rossdale design plan implementation. So can you talk a little bit, I don't know who can answer this, but how does this affect our discussions that we're having at council coming up about West Rossdale?
This is the profile that would do the funding for both the local development around the streets. This would also address the regional needs around some of the major roads. But essentially, this will redo the public realm, the subsurface infrastructure, drainage, etc., and all the roads. And so this is a gross cost. This isn't the net. This isn't after. This does not include the sales cost.
Right.
So this would be a package that could set up the administration to take on this work.
So if it remains unfunded, how does that then affect Rossdale? So does that mean it's Rossdale's, there's no discussion there? There's no point in having a discussion there?
Or? Well, the direction that we have right now, as you know, is to be back in January with, again, based in response to previous direction, the whole Rossdale consideration. So that is now on the table. I guess the short story is that to advance the initiative, we would need either a strong partnership external to the city. We need to leverage other programs that we have in terms of the sequencing of our neighborhood rebuilds, if you will. And then the third piece would be likely some base funding to advance it as well. So it would leave it in a short-term precarious situation.
And if I can add, Councillor, when we brought you that report in July, we did note that through the pro forma work that it's likely that we would be interested in opening up the UDP and the direct control that is in place for that site and have to look at the numbers in terms of the units were being projected.
And so how do you come up with this number if we don't really know what we're doing there?
Well, I think we, in some senses, we put it into a... No, the number has some accuracy relative to both the underground and the above-ground cross, but we put it in as a placeholder.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right, thanks very much.
Councilor McKean?
Thank you.
Everybody's still on the first round, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I'm going to go back to the Jasper Avenue New Vision. And page 196. So in this four-year capital budget cycle, we can only do two blocks. Is that correct?
Councilor McKean, that's what's proposed.
And why does it take that long? Is it CRL funding that slows things down? Is it the nature of the work?
Councilor McKean, there's a couple of things in play. The downtown is experiencing a tremendous amount of traffic congestion. We're trying to plan our construction appropriately. Shutting down Jasper Avenue at certain points in the year is going to create even further impacts. So there's a traffic consideration component. As well, we want to be sure that the priority projects are funded and the lift is there to cover off the costs associated with what Council has told us are priority pieces of the catalytic projects in the plan. So this is the balance and the delicate blend that we're bringing forward and recommending to Council.
So given some change, we could move faster on this. If
that was Council's desire, we could take a look at that, yes.
Keep it in mind, this is serial funding.
Right. And did the Jasper Avenue New Vision at one point, or does it still go 9th to 11th, or was that taken out because of the CRL?
It only extends westward to 9th at this time.
West to 9th, okay. And on page 202, the 105th and 102nd Park, so that'll be done by 2016? Is that the...
Peter? Yes.
Yes, okay, perfect. Page 93, green and walkable downtown. Mr. Trusenko, you just talked about traffic and other issues. There's a lot of construction in that particular area that the green and walkable downtown is contemplating.
That's correct, and this particular package addresses the priority green and walkable areas first, which is 104th Avenue, the Arena District, the Ram, and so on.
Yeah, so is that going to be feasible during arena construction time, too?
Well, in fact, it's being coordinated.
It's being coordinated with it, and we could still keep 104th Avenue open, a couple lanes.
That's the desire. There still may be major structural steel going over that street, and there might be an instance or two where there has to be a degree of closure, but the mission was to keep it flowing as well as possible.
Okay. I want to go off pages here because I'm not exactly sure where I can bring this up, but Columbia Avenue, 105th Avenue, in the last year we've done public consultations on it, and I certainly hear a lot from people about promises that were made to get that project rolling, and I just wanted to hear some assurance that that project is still funded and we'll see some significant construction in this capital cycle.
I can speak a little bit for transportation. Gord Seabrook later on could perhaps provide a more definitive answer, but my understanding is that the money that was set aside for 12 to 14, a portion of it's being used to do some utility work and some further design work, but the bulk of that money is available, and I understand there's a tender waiting to go out, and the anticipated construction for that portion of 5th Avenue at the west end between 19th and I believe 16th or 15th Street is ready to go for 2015.
So was there a bit of a surprise in the need to do this additional utilities work or something, you know, or it held it up? Or?
Well, I think it took some time. I think also there was a coordination element around neighborhood rehab that's supposed to take place in Queen Mary Park as well.
Okay. Yeah. And so that's funded to... 16th, 19th to 16th, that's all we...
I believe to 16th for sure. I think the ability to do any additional work is there for it to go to 16th to 13th, but what I do know for sure, there's an interruption on 12th due to a drainage work which has got connectivity to the downtown.
An eruption?
No, some drainage work.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's some news there.
You never want a drainage eruption.
No. No, you don't.
It's not a good thing.
So you say I have to ask transportation about that, but so you there may be money to carry it past 16th to 13th.
Yeah, I'm just not sure whether how far it goes past, if at all. Yeah.
And to get it further along, it was always planned that there would be developer contributions. Is that what...
They're inside the downtown North Edge plan, which straddles across 5th Avenue, covers the two neighborhoods. There's this development levy that was set up there for parks. And I believe there was also money that's in this profile for 12 to 14, which was also using that redevelopment money for that purpose around the streetscaping.
Get another kick at that one when transportation comes back. It's also a Great Neighborhoods piece of it. Was Great Neighborhoods under... Community Services? Did we go past that one already?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Is.
Well, no deal then, Councillor. You're right out of luck.
You're sitting up there.
No, well, I think the profile is under transportation but has Great Neighborhoods dough in it, so you can still certainly ask about it at any time, and if you make a motion on it, then you can ask questions of any part of administration that you want up in Hollywood Squares. Councillor Essinger.
Thank you. I'd like to look at page 224. It's about the school and parkland acquisitions. Is there any sense how much of this is for park and how much is it for school lands?
Councillor, without diving into some of the numbers, I can just generally describe that profile has been set up to buy all manner of parks below the district level. So those would be school sites with adjoining playing fields, which we've set up under the agreement for joint use. And that could be arranged for either board from K to 9 elementary schools, etc. And then also in there are what we call urban parks or pocket parks and urban district parks. So they take care of those more local neighborhood-based parks. That's what that profile does.
Okay, and I'm interested in the school piece because it seems that schools don't necessarily build on all the land that we are acquiring for them. And it just has a line in here that would require additional support from schools and community services. Have we ever had those conversations to date?
Relative to, sorry?
Maybe not getting as much land because they're not building as many schools as they used.
Certainly we have, and recognize that some of the sites that we're dealing with now were planned out a number of years ago. So in the time since, we've met with boards and we've discussed to review their land requirement needs relative to the number they already have and the ones that eventually became surplus. So those discussions continue to go on, and we're further rationalizing with all ASPs and new NSPs as to what their requirements are for schools. We're hoping to avoid the surplusing issue that we're currently experiencing.
That's what's my hope as well as if we don't need to purchase land. It would have been nice not to have to do that. Thank you.
Councillor Henderson, you've had one, right? Walters, you've had a round.
Yeah.
Sohi, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are many profiles here related to CRL, right? So how are we doing for the quarters CRL first? For the revenue.
Councillor Sohi, we are meeting and exceeding projected targets, and okay. The crossover year would be 2017 when we start generating positive revenue.
2017. Okay, well, that's good. On the downtown CRL, when would we start getting revenue enough to pay for expenditures plus these many profiles in here?
Councillor Sohi, from memory, I believe the crossover period for the downtown CRL is 2022.
Okay. And that's for the...
That's for the phase one, and that's the catalytic projects that council have endorsed.
And so in the meantime, if these profiles are approved, it'll require additional borrowing. And
yes.
Which will increase the 2022... year to into the future.
So the 2022 figure, Councillor Sohi, includes these projects?
Oh, it does.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good then, because that's not too far into the future. Looking at some of the significance of these projects, I just need some clarification on the arena funding on page 212. Right at the bottom, the $7 million for the gas tax share. Is that for the community rink?
Yes, that's for the federal contribution to the community rink. We had raised that on two separate occasions with council as being probably the only way that we would get a federal contribution to the rink.
But that's not their decision to allocate, that's our decision.
It's our decision.
I think it's misleading to say it's their contribution. It is our contribution, because that money belongs to us.
I would agree with that.
I wouldn't classify that as a federal contribution at all. Our $14 million then, yeah. On top of...
So as the profile actually does is specify the funding source, which is the federal gas tax revenue.
Okay.
Yeah,
and the other the provincial is the regional.
So the provincial is the regional for the $25 million commitment to the arena project. Their $7 million for the community rink has not yet been identified. So it's just funded in the other grants.
Okay.
Provincial. So there's $32 million there, 25 of which is from the regional integrated fund,
yeah.
And $7 million from the province, but we haven't actually got a source for that $7 million yet.
Okay, but and we not we're not sure on the regional component.
Well, actually pretty sure on the regional component because they gave it out on a population basis, and we previously reported that our three-year take would be just under $25 million. So, yeah, we're relatively comfortable with that.
Okay. Good. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Do you want to move a second round?
You will.
Second. Seconded by Councillor Oshry. Please vote on a second round of questions on sustainable development. And display the vote. And that's carried. Councillor Henderson is
just,
up next.
Just really quickly so I understand, following up on Councillor Sohi's question. So the so that $7 million, so the amount of money that's in the 16.9 that's about what we see as the increase in gas tax, has already had the $7 million taken out of it?
It has.
Okay, so in actual fact, we're expecting a larger portion back in the gas tax, but is there anywhere else we've pre-committed that money, or is this the only place?
I'm sorry, Councillor Anderson.
Well, the increase in the gas tax that we're going to get from the index of the gas tax, it's showing up in the arena profile. Is there anywhere else where we've already pre-committed that money or that?
No, Councillor.
So it's just that everything else is left.
That's right. We've already taken the $7 million out. So.
Okay. A different question. The TOD station plan on 232. We had a discussion about that. I know that there's things that we're waiting for in terms of possible land in there and partners and what's going to happen. Is this sitting there as another kind of placeholder, or where are we at on it?
Councillor, at the time we put this profile together, I believe we did not have a party interested in acquiring the site, so we put it in for as a placeholder.
Okay.
But we're currently in discussions with a prospective purchaser, and as council is directed, around a partnership deal where we split the funding.
So do we need to, given that and given the timing on this, do we need to do something with this profile? How is that going to be dealt with, or is there a timing a little bit out on this?
I'm told by in discussions with the developer that they're quite interested in acquiring the land.
Okay.
This profile, had it been even in partly funded, would have sent a message around certainty.
Yeah, it would have to be a supplementary.
It would be more appropriate to deal with this as a supplementary.
Yes, it would have to be.
I just wanted to do a double check. I want to make sure we're not accidentally blowing it out of the water, that's all.
We simply don't have enough.
And to do it now would be inappropriate unless we did it in private, is my guess, yes?
We don't have a deal.
Yeah, gotcha. Just to go back, and I just was actually understood a bit more about the way the 109th Street profile is put together. So in actual fact, you have the operating impact is the conceptual design. It was already in operating, right? So there's nothing in the capital right now for the conceptual plan because it's showing up in 2016. There's nothing in 2015 or 2016 right now in the profile. It's on page 231.
Correct. Yes.
So it could be possible to get, theoretically, if for about $5.6 million, according to this profile, in terms of the timing, I'm guessing capacity, we could get started on it as well. So the idea would be to do the design work and then get started on the last couple of years, which would get us about four blocks, right? That's what looks like it's in here. It would get us from, in this cycle, it would get us from 85th Avenue to 89th Avenue.
It's going to be about $1.5 million per block.
Yeah. No, I just, but the way that the profile set up, it said it anticipated that if we'd gone ahead and did the design in 2015, 2016, that we'd be able to get going on about four blocks in the cycle anyway and everything else. So the total dollar figure, which goes over a decade-long period, is actually for everything. It goes way beyond the 1982 commitment, correct?
Well,
it actually would take us all the way from one end to the other. Just so I understand the scope and scale of what, because there's two different pieces of this puzzle. One is the commitment we made in 1982, which was to actually do the work, which we recommitted to, I think, when we did the plan. We said, okay, we're finally going to do this. And the other one was the conceptual piece, where we said we need to understand this so we're ready to go in the future for everything south of, I think, White Avenue.
Unfortunately, Councillor, it won't take care of everything south of White Avenue because we're talking about from 82nd to 61st. It's more than 20 blocks. So
no,
this
not to build. That's the conceptual piece.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yes, you're getting nods behind you here.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the other question that I didn't, you know, I don't know what transportation's plans are. I know what the history is of the stuff further south on 9th. I don't know what's in the plan for the arterial piece, which I don't think has been touched in many years, north of White Avenue, which is the bit that we committed to doing 30 years ago. So I will get to that question when transportation comes up, but I wouldn't mind knowing what our timelines are on that, because obviously, and we're going to be going there and doing neighborhood renewal at some point as well. So we need to sort of figure out how that all goes together. Okay, I think I'm getting the whole picture now, and great, thanks.
Everyone on the board's had a round, right? Correct? Okay, then I'm going to slide in here. Councillor, who's next? Logan?
Oh, I am.
Take the chair. Thank you. The RVA connective infrastructure on page 217, something odd about the profile. It has all of the money in and all of the money out in 2014, and I'm guessing, because timing's been a question on this one, I went to look at it to see, are we still planning to spend it all by 2016, which is what we're supposed to do to get that federal dough.
That is correct. We are looking to spend it all by 2016.
Or is it Q1 of 17? Whatever it is.
It's basically the end of year 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
It should not have been simply all loaded in the first year. That's a mistake on our part.
So you may need to amend that profile just to clarify the timing? Okay, I just wanted to catch that for clarification, especially since we have partners who are concerned about the timing. We may want to run that again. So, okay. And the profile, when you go back a page to 216, is still showing essentially a composite in West Rossdale's 34.4. Now, you'll bring us amendments to this in, I think it's first quarter next year. You're bringing us some more details on what we can actually pay for and get in the ground in the timeline.
And execute on, yes.
Okay. Okay, so we'll see this again in the new year. Okay. Just because nobody's hassled Mr. Mackey. Well, you hassled IT on behalf of Mr. Mackey, I think. But I guess we may come back to it. We likely will come back to it through the operating discussion about your area. But these IT enhancements, are these the kinds of IT enhancements that are going to assist with the e-portal and all of those?
They're largely technology-based, but behind the system, as we develop the technology, we're also re-engineering the processes.
And you're doing those in parallel?
Yes.
That's an integrated exercise. Okay. But the technology is meant to enable the process to happen more smoothly and transparently.
That's correct.
So on. Okay. Okay. And the source of funding for that is the reserve?
Yes.
Okay. Now, we opened up with some questions about the servicing and oversizing option for EETP, and I can't find it in the book. Is it in the supplemental bits that we? Is it in a different report? Or I can't find the page number.
Yes. Page 208, Mayor Everson.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, I knew it was in here, but I couldn't find it. Thank you. The there is continuing work on this, I understand, to refine the estimate. The costs may be a little bit lower than this, potentially. There's some new information that's come to light.
The answer is yes. In conjunction with the developer doing the first phase, they're looking in conjunction with us to different options. We think there probably is a more cost-effective outcome. There's still needed investment.
It's incrementally more cost-effective. It's not that you're going to get it for free.
But we expect some of that information to come in next week and the week after.
Well, I'm tempted to move this, except that if we can get that information back that and we can amend the number, that would be great. And then I want to figure out how to make this tax-supported, Lorna-guaranteed, self-liquidating, something or other. We need to invent a new funding source for this one. Because the whole point is eventually we should get paid back.
Yes.
But this is sort of like the Galleria CRL piece. We have a source of funding that's a few years out that's going to pay that back, but we need to interim finance it between now and then.
And it's just a little bit
longer than that.
Yeah, because it's a little bit longer than 5 years, and we really don't like to just interim fund on the city's working capital for anything that we know is going to stretch beyond 5 years.
No, and we got into a bit of a habit of doing that.
We did.
Previously, which we've clawed our way back out of. We don't want to get back into that habit.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
But we can come up with an approach that is tax-supported debt.
Okay, well, I think Councillor Gibbons is going to want to put this on, and then we can refine it, and as we get into voting it. And the other option is if that's the approach, we really could refine it and then get it on by supplementary capital and before mill rate set. That's it.
Yes, and so there's going to be some refinement. There's going to be some other information that comes forward just about the EETP in general. And so if tax-supported debt is the funding source, you could actually make this decision in the first quarter of next year.
Okay. I will take back the chair, and we'll see if we can finish here. If everybody takes 5 minutes, we'll be over. And we do actually have to deal with one motion before we go on the calendar issue. So, Councillor Zoe, are you still on the board? Or? Okay. Well, that's easy. That saved us 5 minutes. Councillor, that will be remembered. Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Walters.
Very quickly, on page 228, the natural areas acquisition, and is this for the in advance of hearing the rural southeast area structure plan? And what, that's one question, and B, what's the difference between tableland natural areas and what's included in environmental reserve?
Okay, so first question, yes, it is buying large natural areas that we can't acquire through MR or ER. And so then ER is land defined under the Act as being unstable, subject to flooding. Typical examples are wetlands.
Right.
And pieces of ravine or the river valley itself.
Mm-hmm. So what's...
So
natural
this is
area.
So
a natural
area. A natural area is the tree stand that you drive by on 215th Street in Councillor Oshry's ward. That's okay. On the edge of Riverview.
When are we going to debate that ASP?
The Southeast ASP, I understand that it's getting close to being finalized and should come to council in the new year sometime.
And then how long is, so this is just sort of presuming it goes ahead, and I'm just wondering about the timing of this, why it's in this budget, when the build out of that.
Well, we've secured land in the Southeast ASP from this account already. This extra $6 million gives us additional capacity to buy additional lands, some of which could be in the Southeast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get clear on that. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Councillor Anderson.
Back to you again, Mr. Ohm. in urban planning, there's three school grounds and park preparation. McTaggart, Windermere, and Ambleside. The amount of money in those projects does not just the area around the school, but the entire park that the school site is on?
Correct.
And would the difference in the amount of money in those three reflect a difference in the size of the park?
A little bit, but the McTaggart profile already has design money that we got last year. So that was a previously approved profile for McTaggart, 6.9, and then the other two were slightly over $2 million.
Well, I thought that they were all designed in our previous budget.
My understanding is the only one that we have design underway for is McTaggart.
Okay. Yeah. I'll double check that. Yeah. But other than that, it would be size.
Size would be yes. Yeah, it's a pretty simple formula in terms of size type.
I mean, even Windermere and Ambleside, there's $600,000 difference.
Right.
They're and both being designed then, according to you, right?
Yes.
So it might.
It's a size.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, and Councillor, the Windermere site does accommodate a second school, so it's bigger. Yeah. Okay.
Councillor Knack.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Holm, again, I didn't circle the name. So the profile that would be used to fund the purchase of some park space in mature neighborhoods to maybe fulfill the obligations in some of those ASPs, ARPs, what was the name of that one?
Look it up here. It is CM17. 1002, and it's mature area land acquisition. It's on.
Yeah, I see that one. Okay, mature area land acquisition, and that was originally, was that the 21.5? Did you say, or is that the 32?
That's 32.
Now 32 would catch you up to. The reason that number's there is that to catch up on all of the things that we're behind on.
Well,
where did that number come from, since I don't have it in front of me?
It came from a review of several ARPs as to commitments around purchasing land for purposes of park.
So that would say, all right, let's get every park that we need for all the areas still remaining.
If I can just check, but I don't think it does.
Okay.
Yeah, Councillor Knack as well. Councillor Knack, that particular profile isn't in the group that's council's considering.
So that's actually what I may be leading to. So I'm trying to ask the question. Maybe it's can we get a copy of that profile? Because I'd be curious if maybe we can start putting in even just a little bit to start moving that dial. If we're talking, we've got some outstanding ARPs of 30 years.
We can do that.
Okay, so I'll get that before I move anything, because I'd like to see how much maybe we might be wanting to put in. Thank you.
Councillor Nickel.
Well, Mr. Ohm, you know, I only have one question, right? How do we know how much that we need? And how do we determine the categories for each fund? And this goes to the metric question of park acquisition, right? Are we winning or losing the fight since we're adding 30,000 people a year to the city of Edmonton? And this ties into Ms. Cochran. I know it's tough. And I just, perhaps you can give me your comments on that, because I know it's a tough one, because there's lots of pots of money floating all around, and you've got lots of things placed on your desk. Well, I got to do this little bit and this little bit. But for a metric, how much land sure would we be acquiring for parkland in general?
So there are a couple of dimensions to that. In the case of suburban land, we acquire it based on the planned need that's specified in an ASP and an NSP.
That's right.
Right. And the factors that influence how big a site would be population density, the geographic area of the neighborhood, the schools that are planned to be on there, the size of those schools, because those then relate back to the standards set in the UPMP. So that's the suburban context. In the case of mature areas, we do have a number of plans in place that do specify the acquisition of additional parkland over time to be able to accommodate additional density. And we can go through those plans. We can identify what those sites were. In fact, they get right down to the acreage level. And so we can accumulate that and also cost it. Then we also, as we mentioned, have school sites coming. Those are not municipal reserve sites, and they are sites that we can identify by working with the boards in terms of what the area could be for surplus.
You see, as a strategic metric, you understand what I'm trying to get at. It's about, okay, we have put, this is what the plans have called for. This is kind of the approximated value. So city council, it's kind of like roads. We kind of know that we have to pay so much for arterial road renewal and that sort of thing. And a similar sort of application to this sort of business, would not that make sense as well? I'm just saying going forward. Because I have a tough time to, I see a $14 million number, $17 million number. You know, from a comparator, it's... What do I know? I'm just a counselor, right?
Yep.
So, Mr. Clausen, do you want to make a comment on that too?
Two comments. First of all, with respect to the metrics and what's appropriate for the city, we are engaging upon a review of the Parks and Recreation, or the Parks Master Plan, if you will, which provides the opportunity to test all of those principles that we feel are important and where those metrics should be in terms of acquisition. I would highlight something for the benefit of yourself and council, though, is that in the new year, we will need another round of conversations. Right now, what you see in there are funding available for three schools which have been identified. The province has announced an additional 11 schools that we, within the city of Edmonton, need to think about how we're going to engage with an outcome in there for our communities that hasn't been addressed at this point. So I'm just providing that for your benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because it's talking about the inventory, how much the inventory needs to grow, and then that really leads us to the risks that we need to clearly identify. And the same goes for trails and those sorts of natural assets. Would you not agree?
We agree. The second area of risk will be the outright growth as the parkland is turned over to us within the new development areas. We have funding available in there for a portion of that. There is not a complete solution with respect to all of the turned over lands, which are going to be particularly those councillors in the wards and the suburban areas.
Yeah, and are we speaking from an operational side?
No. We're speaking from the point of view that we actually physically take over X acres of land to which we then need to finish that product off to a base level.
Okay, so it's even more than that. Then we have another component. I see.
And we'll be needing to further engage with council as we garner solutions in those areas too.
No, thank you very much for that information, because it is at the, I'm trying to drive into that sense of getting those broader tools to identify for everybody here that what problems are coming up and where money needs to be prioritized. And
in terms of the new developing suburban areas, we now have a very good understanding over the next 5 to 10 years what those numbers will look like. We're able to map them. We're able to show roughly the scale.
And as for the mature areas, more of a challenge, and I'm out of time.
More of a challenge. But I would also point out that a number of the profiles in here within the context of the downtown have actually addressed that as well in terms of the CRL.
They can leave their books and stuff here.
Yep. I have a subsequent on IT, but in the interest of time, we'll deal with that later. There is one thing that is a bit pressing that I'd like to deal with before anyone says the O word.
I move to extend to deal with the one thing then.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you. Please vote on extending to deal with the thing. The thing is a schedule change.
Motion to change orders of the day.
It's a motion to change orders of the day, and I'll ask Councillor McKean to do it. It's for a much later budget meeting, but I'll explain why once he makes it.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. I will move that the orders of the day for the November 26, 2014 City Council budget meeting be changed to recess on December 9th, 2014 at 5:30 p.m. and reconvene on December 10th, 2014 at 1:30 p.m.
By which is meant, because this is actually, thank you, Councillor Nicol, this is actually one continuous meeting that starts today but goes until we're done all of the budgets. So it's a little bit different, and the substance is to delete the morning on December 10th because it's the only time the Minister of Municipal Affairs can meet, and it was suggested that, if I didn't make time, then it wasn't a priority, and so I'm asking for the accommodation. I offered them Christmas Eve in response. because it is a priority. So we do need to, what this means is you all get the morning off and I go to the legislature and see if I can get a better deal. So if you vote yes, then you guys can sleep in that morning and I'll go see what I can do at the legislature. And hopefully we'll be done by then anyway. So is everybody ready to vote on that one? Please vote.
Yes, sir.
Display the vote. That's carried. Thank you very much. Just one reminder, you can leave your books here. No one else is using this room. We'll come back here. We'll pick up here at 9:30 in the morning with the Edmonton Police Commission first up for civic agency presentations. I would also advise that if you have amendments, you may wish to prepare all of those because we may actually get through all of the questions of everybody tomorrow, and we might even get into debate, which would mean we'd have to have all the amendments on the table. So please work to prepare those, and we'll see you tomorrow. We're in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow.